Welcome to Manners and Madness, a Jane Austen and David Lynch podcast. My name is Maya Adkins.
And I'm Christian Cabrera. And today we will be covering The Fablemans.
David Lynch's acting role. Yeah. One of his acting roles.
Well, you know, we always got to be like, well, even if he's in this for a 1 minute flat, you know, it's a David Lynch piece.
Well, honestly, he was the best part in my opinion.
I did just smile and feel very warm inside when he came on screen. So,
oh my God. Actually, when he came on screen, I was like, I got a little bit teary. And I was like, if I ever were to meet David Lynch in person, I think I would just bawl and it would just be embarrassing.
Well, yeah, when an artist has impacted your life in such a personal way, it's hard to not have personal emotional feelings.
Yeah.
If you were to see that person in person.
Well, there's been like a story going around about David Lynch on all the groups because he wrote some animated, I don't know if it's a series or a movie, with, the lady who wrote, I don't know. She wrote something that you would have heard of. It's called Snoot World, and he pitched it to Netflix, and they rejected it.
Rude.
And I'm guessing he was like, well, I'm going to, you know, say, oh, I'm so disappointed that they rejected it, so that maybe he could get somebody else to.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking, you know, I bet if David Lynch were to crowdfund anything, he would get all the money he needed, you know, plus maybe
literally,
like a couple of French millionaires or something.
Exactly. I do feel like David Lynch fans are so supportive in that way, where it's like they would see some sort of crowdfunding and they'd be like, well, here's $100,000 I took out a loan.
And then he could put it up on like the Criterion channel or even his YouTube channel, honestly.
I mean, it's pretty audacious that Netflix of all streaming services would decline anything, because it feels like they just put up whatever at this point. I mean,
cheap stuff.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the quality of most of their programming is pretty horrible.
Well, occasionally there's some good stuff. They have,
of course,
a really good animation show that I like called Hilda, but I think that's over now.
Yeah. Every single time it's like, because we kind of got rid of Netflix just because it was getting so expensive, and we kind of realized we didn't really watch a lot of it. But every time we were like, what is on Netflix that we watch or whatever? And every time we would kind of come up with something, we'd be like, oh, well, it ended, or they canceled it. So it was like, what was the point of even having it? So we actually just got it a few weeks ago because they had a new season of Somebody Feed Phil, which is a great travel show. And Girls 5 Eva, which is a very fun, silly show that I love. And so we were like, well, we've got it for 1 month. So I've been trying to fit everything in that I care about from Netflix, which, you know, luckily isn't too much.
I barely watch anything on Netflix, but it is one of the few streaming things that I subscribe to at the moment. It's actually one of the ones I can't really get rid of for reasons, but so I always check it out. And there occasionally, I recently watched the Avatar Last Airbender series, which was pretty good. And I used to really love The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but one of the people who was in it just died.
I just saw that. That's so, and like a motorcycle accident, right?
I know.
So
motorcycles
sad.
Are so dangerous.
Please stop it.
I know so many people have been killed on motorcycles. It's kind of
like tragic. Scary. Well, obviously, I don't think you could be killed on a motorcycle, not tragically, but just like, it's just so violent the way that you go out on one. And we've known some people within our community who have definitely died on those, and they're just so dangerous. And even if you do wear protective gear, you know, with cars getting bigger and bigger, it's so dangerous.
Yeah. What else? Oh my gosh. I was also, I'm going to say, because when we're doing Clue, I don't know if that wasn't the last thing we did, but it was a couple episodes ago. We had mentioned how please don't make a Monopoly movie. And guess what I saw? They're making a Monopoly movie.
No.
And they're making another Clue, supposedly. No. I don't know if that's actually happening.
They better not. They're going to...
Ryan Reynolds.
No. I do like Ryan Reynolds in most things, but Clue is just one of those things where, to me, that's a perfect movie. Nothing can be improved. There's no new direction to go in.
They'd have to do something completely different. They couldn't just, you know, remake the original because, Ryan Reynolds is no Tim Curry.
Yeah, that is very true. Are they going to do some sort of like, you know, this is Mrs. Peacock on TikTok and she's got 10 million followers and that's why she was invited. I don't need that. That is not something that the world is needing, nor a Monopoly movie, because we are living in Monopoly. That is what capitalism is.
The only thing about the Monopoly movie that seems like, I don't know, maybe they could do something interesting with it, is that it's Margot Robbie's production company, and they're the ones who did, or I guess bought the rights to Barbie as well. And right. I was pretty uninterested in Barbie until I saw the trailer, and then I was like, and you know, I watched the movie, I thought it was cute, so maybe they could do something good with Monopoly. Maybe they'll integrate the original story.
Yeah, maybe. It's just like, you know, with Barbie, there was like, you know, it was just the doll. Like, she could do anything and everything, basically. So it was like the possibilities were way more open. With Monopoly, it's like, it's a board game. You buy property and you tax other people. And you go to jail. Like, what else is there to do? So I don't know. I'm kind of like, you know, even with like Barbie enjoying it as much as I did, I'm so like against all of these like toy movies or game movies. I don't need that. We don't need any sort of like, I don't know, like Bop It movie or Chutes and Ladders. I don't need that. I want...
Well, you know, we were talking that there are quite a few good board game movies, surprisingly. So, but I just have such a distaste for Monopoly that I just don't know.
I enjoy playing Monopoly only because it's a long board game, and I do like to play board games like for a while. Like, I love playing Life. That was one of my favorite ones because it was a long game. And
I did like the turn little...
Oh, yes, the little... what do you call them? The turn ticker. Spinner. Well, hopefully they do not make another Clue, because I will not be watching that, just like I have not watched a bunch of other things that they have either remade or tried to make anew.
Well, I did realize while watching this movie that we did today that, like, I'm just not that into normal movies about normal stuff.
Very, like, realism. Like, this is a life.
Yeah, I was like, okay, real world problems, fun. But I did enjoy the movie, but actually right now me and my dad are watching Three Body Problem. I know you started it too.
Yeah, we finished it, just finished it.
Of course. Well, we were talking about how, because we only get together once a week, and usually we only watch about one episode of something.
They're long.
Yeah, those are long ones, but we both agreed that it's been very hard for us to not just watch it on our own, so we're gonna try to watch two next week.
I really enjoyed it. I love a good sci-fi. I never read the book, but it kind of makes me want to read the book just to see like how much of the book is in the show, and just the way it ended, also like the series. I want to know what of the book is in the show, because it just is so interesting. It's such an interesting concept, something that I could obviously never do because I do not like physics or math. And I refuse to try and like it, so.
Well, it's a trilogy of books. Experiencing
it.
And
okay, good.
I actually put it on my Audible wish list today because I got my new credits.
Ooh.
And I remember, because I used to listen to a sci-fi and fantasy book club podcast. And I'm pretty sure they did the Three Body Problem at some point. I started off listening to it and trying to read along, but eventually it was just me listening to them talk about books. But yeah, I was on the Audible today and I was like, I want something scary. So I was like looking through the horror section, but it seemed like everything was like horror, like gothic romance, which and all of the gothic romance have like major trigger warnings, which, you know, I'm not really triggered by things, but it's just like, I don't know what what is this book? I want something scary. I don't want Twilight.
Yeah, yeah. I love a good scary book. I haven't read a horror book, or quite frankly any book, in a while. But I do remember, especially like in junior high and high school, I would read definitely like the Goosebumps series, but kind of like that was like during the time in the summer where I would go to the library kind of every weekend and get new books. Mm-hmm. And just like, you kind of run out at that point of like books you know about. So you kind of are like, well, I'll just try this one. And I remember like grabbing a bunch of horror books and being like, I love these books because they're like scary, but in like a fun way, because it's words.
Yeah. I mean, Stephen King was definitely like my first really author that I fell in love with and read all their books. And this was like seventh grade.
Yeah.
And even before that, I really loved like Christopher Pike and R.L. Stein, Fear Street books. And
oh, yeah.
I was always going to the scary section.
I love
it. Which is probably why I love David Lynch so much.
Yes, I loved horror and fantasy books. I was very much into different kinds of fantasy books for a while.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the problem. Right now, I have a lot of books or audiobooks that are unlistened to, but they're almost all fantasy. And while I do love fantasy, I was just like, I just want something scary. I started one called Gideon the Ninth, and I'm not really sure what the premise is, but it definitely is kind of creepy, and I'm interested to see what happens. It's very kind of like fantasy, but with like the tropes of horror, like kind of, but it seems like it's another planet maybe, but like it's also kind of like
interesting,
devil-y, I don't know, hellish, I don't know.
Demons of sorts.
Yeah.
I like that, though. I remember when I was trying to get really into fantasy books, I was looking for like something to get into that was like not Lord of the Rings, or like something that was kind of like more, that would be like completely new to me. And I tried to, I can't even remember what the series was called, but it was like one of those fantasy series where it has like 14 different books and it's like the lore is so deep. And like the characters are so many of them. And all I remember is picking out the book to try and read it because it had like a really cute like mouse knight on the cover. And I was like, oh my God, that's the cutest little mouse knight. But I was way too young for that book. I was like, I can't remember all of these names and all of these like rules for this world. It's too much.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do love a good fantasy series.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, I've been listening to the Terry Pratchett novels. The only thing is on Audible, they got rid of all the like old ones. They're like redoing all their classic books right now. So they're like getting rid of the old versions and having new versions. And it's like,
weird.
Oh, do I have to get the new versions of the ones I already listened to? But I don't have to, but like, would
it might be
like
a different
that?
Experience. Yeah. Are they getting like new readers? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, and they'll have like more than one reader. And
oh, interesting.
It's not like a dramatization, I don't think, but, or maybe, I don't know if these ones are. They're not all like that, but, you know, sometimes you listen to the old ones and it's like, I can barely even hear this.
Yes. There was a time where I was on Audible for, I think it was in a book club that we were both in. And that was like a time where I was like, I'm trying to read more books. And I was very proud of the books that I suggested. It was only two. But I think the first one was Swing Time by Zadie Smith, which was fun. And then the second one was the Annihilation book, which was so different
than the movie. I read that, didn't I? For that Did yes. I go to that particular book club meeting?
You did. You were, yeah, I think you were one of the three that read the book, which was a little bit
That's
annoying
kinda
to me.
That's kind of why I dropped out of that book club.
Yeah, me too.
No one ever read the books I recommended.
But it was just like, the book was so good. It was so different than the movie, which the movie is also really good. But there's just so much more in the book. And I was just so annoyed that no one read it because it was so, like, science fiction crazy. Like, I could not even think of those things.
I think they read The Three-Body Problem in that book club because I've seen them post yes. about it when the series came out.
Yes, I did. I do remember that because it was right before I joined. And I remember them being, you know, like, we didn't understand it, so we don't like it. And I was like, well... Maybe that seems like more of a personal problem.
It is kind of hard to understand based on the series so far. Now, granted, watching television with my dad sometimes, he'll be like, let me tell you about this video game I'm playing in the middle of the dense lore. And I'm like, Dad, this is why you don't ever know what's going on.
Yeah, just watch. Yeah, usually with shows like that, I like to have subtitles on because sometimes it's just... easier to understand the concepts reading them than hearing them. But yeah. I still had really a lot of fun with Three Body Problem. And I felt like it was actually like kind of scary, like a new kind of alien scary to me at least.
Yeah. I mean, I'm only like three episodes in, but it definitely has like a scary kind of yeah. Don't trust anything. Kind of
yes. Yes. I'm like, who is good? Who is bad? No one knows.
What is even reality?
Exactly. But it's really good. I really enjoyed it. And I'm, you know, since it's a trilogy, I mean, I hope Netflix keeps on making it.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like they should. If it's only three seasons, that's like kind of their favorite.
It's usually their cutoff anyway. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, should we go ahead and start talking about The Fablemans?
Sure. I'm assuming this was your first time.
Oh, yes. We've been meaning to do it for the podcast forever, but I kind of just was like, oh, we'll do it someday. Kept putting it off.
Well, you know, it's 2.5 hours long, which we typically do a lot of 90-minute-ish movies on this podcast, and which I really enjoy.
Sometimes, like with a David Lynch, it'll be like 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, but like to me, I'm like, well, this is like, you know, this is education. It feels more of like a, I've already prepared to do that for this podcast because it's a David Lynch movie. So,
yeah,
you know, committing to 2.5 to 3 hour movies sometimes is just like, it's a lot.
Especially if it's like not really sci-fi or fantasy or horror or something interesting, you know. I mean, not that I found the story very good. I liked mm-hmm. it. I ended up breaking it up over 2 days because
mm-hmm.
I just
That's smart.
Couldn't possibly stay awake long enough to watch the whole thing, so I kind of stopped it like right around when they moved to California.
Yes.
Or yeah, I think yeah. so. And I think I liked the second half better than the first half, personally.
Yeah. It almost to me felt like there were two different movies happening when they were in, like, there was a movie when they were in Phoenix, and then there was a different movie happening when they moved to California.
Right.
Like, it just felt so separate from each other.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was just, like, my state of mind while watching it, mm-hmm. but the first half I was just like, oh my god, this is going so slowly. Like, everyone was good, but I kept checking the clock and being like, it's only been 5 minutes.
Well, so this is my, I would say this is my overall sort of first impression of this movie, was I did enjoy it. I thought it was a solid movie. Like, it's good. All the actors were really great. It looked really beautiful. But it didn't really have a sort of like spark to it. It felt like nothing really grabbed me. Nothing was really nothing really is like there to stick in my mind. Like, it was just like a nice story.
Yeah.
And part of me is wondering, like, because it was kind of like a lot of the, you know, like realism, like peek into the daily lives of people kind of movies are indie movies. And I wonder if maybe like it just felt too big for such a concept like that, because it was kind of a big budget movie, a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would have fared better with more of an indie vibe, personally.
Yeah, I could see that. I didn't realize, well, I mean, obviously, like when the credits rolled, I was like, oh, Tony Kushner wrote this with Steven Spielberg. I was like, well, that's, if you're going to get someone to write the story of your life.
Yeah. It might as well get to it. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure they're now, probably
friends,
too.
Do I wish there was a movie like this for David Lynch's life? Yes.
Well, there should be. Yeah. I would say the story itself is not, you know, it's not uninteresting at all. I think it's very, very sweet. And especially like you could, like, I mean, knowing interviews that Steven Spielberg did about it, and then obviously watching a lot of like the awards show from 2022, you could definitely tell like he really made it for his mom. Like, I think there was like a special bond that they had, which, you know, it's definitely explored in the movie, but I kind of wish it was explored more. I felt like he was trying to like include all of his family, and where I really only cared about his mom, if I'm being honest.
It seems like that's really all he cared about that much.
Right. But I wish it was like, you know, I wish it was less about like, this is me and my family growing up, and more about like, this is about me and my mom. And my family was there, obviously, but it's more, the focus is just on their relationship. Yeah. And I kind of wish it had stuck to that, because like the certain developments in the story that were, you know, that his mom had, I felt like we didn't really get to explore that as much. We just kind of were like, well, it happened and now we're moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there was some really interesting stuff with like when they got divorced and
the affair,
you know, her relationship with Benny, and like, I don't know, like the nature of friendship versus romantic, and, you know, right, who you love, and but like being able to let people go, which
right,
it just wasn't really like, I don't think there was like a thesis or anything like that. It was just like, you know, I mean, but it was really interesting. It just wasn't, and I, you know, I was emotionally invested in the story. It just
more so the second half, for sure.
Yeah, I was really actually way more interested in, once they got to California, like him at school and being bullied, and, you know, finding his first girlfriend, and, you know, turning the bullies around, and then, you know, heading off to make movies.
Yeah.
I just feel like that was way more interesting to me, and I would have liked to see a whole movie about that. And then maybe he could have done one about just his mom. And, you know, even he could have been an ancillary character within it or something. But
yeah, because I feel like she's a very interesting person, especially for that time period. She was just so, her thought process was so, I don't know if this is the right word, but ancillary to what the societal norm was. Like, she didn't want to be a housewife. She was like this insanely talented pianist and, you know, all this great stuff. And I think it would be so much more interesting to explore that part and get to know her more. I want to know her more than I knew her from the movie.
Yeah. But, I think the nature of, we're exploring it from the son's perspective, and, you know,
right,
it's not until you're really an adult that you ever feel like you know your parents.
Right.
Or like you actually know your parents.
Well, you like look at them as not just parents. You're like, oh, I guess they are people too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was so good.
Yeah. Also, I really liked his sisters. The one scene of him and his sister near the end, I was like, I wish I'd had way more of this kind of stuff.
I agree. Yeah. I don't know. It definitely, like, it was good, but it felt like it was missing something. And maybe it might, honestly, it might have just been the first half missing, like, what is the through line? Especially, like, in the very beginning where he's, like, a little kid and they're going to the movie. And then I'm like, all right, well, clearly this is, we know this is Steven Spielberg. So we're like, we know he's going to fall in love with movies and be like, I want to make movies. But then we have to go through the whole, like, story of him getting a train and then him trying to figure out, why do I want to crash the train? It's like, I don't care about that. I want him to, let's jump to the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too much.
Although I did find the train thing kind of interesting. Like, just the whole idea of taking your kid to a movie, their first movie, mm-hmm. and being like, oh, crap, what is this that I'm showing them? And then
right.
him being like, I want a train set because I want to make a crash, you know?
Yes. What I did think was really kind of effective was the scene of them all in the movie, watching that train crash movie. And, like, not I've never really thought about it in this way until this movie, but, like, how, like, at that time where movies were, like, you know, like, you got to think, like, how did they pull that off? It looks so, like, crazy real, especially for that time. And just, like, the horror of, models. Like, a train crash. Huh?
Yeah. I said probably with models.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly like he did.
Looking at it from a, you know, 21st century lens, it's definitely very apparent. But, like, I could totally see back then just being like, oh, my God, like, this looks so real and it's so scary because it's a train crash and just everyone's reactions. I was like, oh, that was really effective.
Was that a John Ford movie perchance?
Oh, I wish I remembered. I couldn't tell you what it was. I'm really bad with classic movies. I've not watched a lot of them.
I have seen I've seen a lot of, you know, classic movies, I think, but I've never been like a let me immerse myself in the world of mm-hmm. cinema and learn all of the history of it kind of person.
Well, my household was just not a classic movies kind of like place. Like I didn't watch a lot of like older movies like past the 90s until I was like an adult, because we just weren't a movie kind of family in that way. Where a lot of other people are like, well, I've seen, you know, I saw The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind when I was a child, and that was not my case. I was like, no.
Yeah, we definitely had classics that we watched all the time. Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. Christmas things, like It's a Wonderful Life, because my mom, those were like her favorites. And my grandparents, whenever I go to their house, they pretty much just lived off of TCM. And Fox News, but we always changed it to TCM when I got there.
Like, please give me a break. Yeah, but it definitely had, I liked the way it looked. It had a very classic movie feel to it. And I loved the, I would hesitate to call it a patina because it probably is just like some sort of filter, but just the way it looked, I thought was really pretty.
Yeah. Should we try to go through beat by beat or just
maybe like sections? Let's call it sections, because
okay. Well, was there anything in the early childhood part that stood out that was like
I liked the them watching the movie for the first time when he was like a little boy, and that was like really sweet, and seeing how his mom and dad interacted with him was really sweet. Because I mean, Michelle Williams was like so wonderful in this movie, but she's wonderful in everything. So, but it was just very sweet and very heartwarming and very fun. Like, it felt very fun to watch all these people watching a movie like this in a theater back then. And then the whole Hanukkah kind of sequence was very fun. Getting
with
each
the grandmothers.
Train piece.
Train pieces. Yeah.
And I love the grandmothers were really great. They're like, they're definitely like very like huge personalities. Like, I want these grandmas to be my grandmas. And it was very interesting. But something that I'm thinking about now, which was very interesting, was I noticed when they came home from the movie that they made a comment about how their house was the only one not decorated because they're, you know, they're like, Jewish people don't decorate for Christmas. So I wonder why there was such a huge spike in anti-Semitism in the second half when they moved to California, when they technically were probably one of the only Jewish families in Phoenix.
Well, the beginning they were in like New Jersey, I think.
Oh, was it? Really?
In childhood. Yeah. Oh, and then because they moved to Arizona, and that's when the first time that she was like, you're going to bring Benny with it.
right.
And, but it seemed like in Arizona, they had a very like, all the kids he was hanging out with looked like they were multinational or multi.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they definitely were Latin kids. And it just seemed like a very diverse group of kids. there in Arizona, where then you go to California and you get like the very typical.
Well, it's Northern California too. And Northern California is like very, I would say, like, I'm going to say all of it, but the majority of Northern California, from what I've heard, is very conservative, very white. That because you're going to bleed into Oregon and all those other kind of places where white nationalists love to go. So,
well, I did think it was fun to see Paul Dano as a father, because for some reason, I don't even know what I know him from, but he was definitely a young person. Mm-hmm. Not like a kid, but like, you know,
younger,
in his 20s when I first knew him. So it's always funny when you're like, oh, you're grown up just like me now.
Yes. Yeah, I he definitely, like, in the beginning was like a very sweet dad, but, you know, very quickly morphed into, like, you know, the anti-creative dad, which I'm like, get over yourself. Because you're ruining your entire family's life, but whatever.
He wasn't too annoying about it, but
no,
he
but
definitely, yeah.
I always have a very strong reaction to those types of characters because I'm like, what do you know? You don't even you don't even listen to your family.
Well, let's go ahead and move to Arizona, because I really liked the him learning to be a filmmaker and like filming all his friends and making movies, and the when he did like the light, the
holes in the film.
Light holes.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, that really was like really fun to see, like, because I never, you know, had the inclination to make home movies or anything like that. So just like as an adult looking back, I'm, you know, personally, I would be like, how would you do all these like sort of things, like movie magic and like the bomb explosions of like just having a plank under the sand and stepping on it really hard makes it look like an explosion. And just the way that they put like poppers in the sand to make it look like machine gun bullets. Like it's all this like really cool creative stuff that it's like, oh, that is so smart. And kids are so smart. I don't understand how they figure these things out, but it looks like so much fun too. Like I would have loved doing that as a kid, just like, especially like the scene of the sisters in the like the carriage screaming with all the sand going around. Like that was so fun. It looked so cute.
Yeah. And then he finds out the power of film when he records a camping trip discovers. I mean, it was very unclear at first because it seemed like he discovered an affair between his mother and Benny. Although I think we could tell from the very beginning that it was like
something was,
she was more attached to him really than her husband. But in the end, I mean, ultimately she's like, I wasn't having an affair, but maybe it like was an emotional affair, but
it wasn't anything physical, which is a, you know, a very interesting conversation to have with your child, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a very interesting scene. I feel like that would have been so cool to explore even more, the more complex and like in-depth feelings of finding that information out about your parent. Like the fact that, you know, as a child, he noticed that there was a bond between Benny and his mom that was definitely like deeper than friendship. He's like, I know this is different.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is so interesting that he finds it through doing the film, because I feel like that's one of those things. I know I experienced it with my parents, not the same situation, but like you get to a certain age and you may have like revelation. Oh my God, how did I not know this my whole life?
Right. Yeah. So to have that like kind of like confirmation come from yourself in a way, like it was like, oh, that's like, what a crazy feeling that would be. And, you know, something that I've never experienced like that. So I would like love to know more. What was the more complex things going on in your mind?
Yeah.
But
and it was really interesting to see like how he dealt with that and like how he was like kind of a little dick.
But, yes.
You know, I mean, justified, I guess. But like, it was interesting, like how, you know, he was like not talking to anyone. And then his mom basically slaps him in the back.
Oh, yeah.
I think she would have slapped his face if he hadn't turned around.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a really kind of I liked that scene. I thought it was very kind of, it was very powerful to me, just like the way, like her reaction to it happening right after, like the immediate guilt and regret.
Yeah.
And like his reaction where it was like, he kind of became a little, because he was not, I mean, he was like probably like what, 13 maybe or something, like 12. He was young.
Well, when he goes to California, he's a senior. So he's probably, I would say, 14 or 15.
Yeah. And so like,
maybe 16 even.
Yeah. And so like, to kind of like, he kind of reverted at that moment and kind of became like a little kid again. Like,
oh, he definitely was 16 because he had just gotten his driver's license.
Right, right. And so like, I loved that scene where it was like, it kind of reset it, like mm-hmm. not reset, but kind of like really brought to light, like, this is your true dynamic. Like, you guys have been operating in this zone of intense emotions and
yeah,
this kind of unintentionally, probably, and definitely like unfortunately, you shouldn't hit your children. It brought back the original like mother child dynamic, because she was so guilty about it and he was like so like hurt and so like, but like ready for her to like, what's the word, like nurture him, like, you know.
Yeah.
He allowed it to happen, like the recovery of it, basically.
Yeah, like how he kind of locked her in the closet and said, watch. Yes. Watch. And you'll know why I'm pissed. But yes. Then I feel like that really brought them closer. So that's probably really, in a way where, well, I mean, I guess they already had kind of a special bond, but I feel like that was...
It added a layer.
Kind of added to the... Yeah. And Benny ended up getting him the camera.
Yeah.
Which was a fun scene. Seth Rogen was really good, too.
He was really good. I enjoyed him in this movie. I felt like it was a little different than what he normally kind of does. Yeah, and I loved that it really made me like kind of think about the parents' relationship, like, because she clearly has this much more intense emotional bond to Benny, and I feel like it's probably a little bit easier to bond with him because he probably feels a little more creative than mm-hmm. Paul Dano's character does. And the fact that he was the one who gave the camera to him when he was moving, like the special camera, like it almost felt like this like paternal figure that in that sort of creative field that he never had, kind of felt like it, this person became that, but which was so complicated based on this emotional affair that he found out about.
Yeah. And it basically led them to move to California.
Yes, Northern California, which from the get was like pit in your stomach, like, oh, this is not good. I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, first they move into a rental house, which nobody seems to like, although it looks almost identical to their last house, so I don't know what was so terrible about it.
It does. It looks a lot like the Insidious house in the Insidious movies. It looked almost exactly like that to me, which is very funny. But yeah, I was like, this is a really nice house. Yeah, so whatever, get over it.
School sucks because there's one particular boy who is definitely race or anti-Semitic, and then there's like the popular boy who just kind of laughs and goes along with him. Ugh, and then there's a bunch of like background footballish type people who just kind of stand around looking menacing.
Yeah, they're like the henchmen. They do all the they're like, yes, man. They do all the, yeah, you're right, yeah.
He ends up getting his punched in the nose by the popular kid. And
so bad.
I don't know if they get the monkey before that or after that. But
I think it was after, which was
it was just so random, like, crazy. What?
Well, I feel like because this is very autobiographical and that did happen, I felt like, you know, if I was like making a movie and my mom, like, you come home from school one day and your mom had bought a monkey, you're like, there's no way I can't put this in the movie. Like, yeah. I have to. The fact that there was a monkey in our house.
Yeah. And it was kind of like, at least according to the movie, like her substitute for basically not having her best friend around anymore.
Right.
And, or her, you know, I don't even know if you would call it best friend.
she like
it's more like she needed that emotional support, and her husband wasn't, he was very kind and supportive of what she wanted to do, but just not like, he didn't have fun with her.
Yeah, well, that's like, that was kind of like what was so interesting to think about when Benny gives Sam the camera. It's like, you know, Paul Dano, he was never like a bad dad. You never, there was never any sort of like abuse as far as the movie is concerned, or anything like that. He just was very much aligned like emotionally with the work that he did. He was very like literal, very technical. He wasn't going to be this like kind of lovey-dovey character, which is always very tough to have as a child. Yeah. Which, and also we find out he was a World War II veteran, so it's like, who knows what's going on in that brain.
Yeah, and he might have had like some sort of neurodivergence, because I mean, with that obvious genius level smarts, or what they keep calling genius level.
But yeah,
I never really knew what he did exactly.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk of like GE, and he did this IBM. One thing. He did this one thing that IBM wishes that they could do, and blah blah blah. It was very much like he's you know, physics or technical genius,
who programmer knows? Or something, maybe.
Yeah, but
anyway, back to school.
Yes.
When he gets punched, the guy's like, "You're gonna go," because he basically let me just tell the story of the kid was like, you know, being an asshole, and then this guy was like, you know, apologize to my girlfriend. I don't even remember why he needed to apologize.
Oh,
but,
it was because, well, because of racism. He was like, "You're Jewish, and Jewish people killed Jesus.
Right.
And Jesus is their savior because they're Christian. So you need to apologize." I was like, where's the sense?
But instead of apologizing, he says, "Well, why don't you apologize for kissing a redhead in the hallway?"
Which was like, yeah, yep, exactly.
So after he punches him in the face, he's like, "You gotta go tell my girlfriend that you were lying." So he goes to tell her that he was lying, her and her friend. And, you know, not very convincingly, they obviously know that he was actually telling the truth.
Yeah.
But her friend, who is very Christian in certain ways, loves Jesus, immediately is smitten with him.
Yes. That whole scene of them in her bedroom, where it's like just all sorts of Jesus like posters and pictures all over the wall and a cross, and it's just, Jesus is sexy too, and like, this is very,
I didn't know where that scene was going. I was like, is this gonna be terrible? But no, they ended up having a cute little relationship, and
which was nice.
Yeah. And so anyway, they her dad has a fancy camera and lets him borrow it for ditch day, where they all go to the beach and play. And so he filmed the whole thing, which was a fun sequence. And I guess they come back. It's like prom or something.
Yeah.
And
I think so.
Before he show, oh, sorry. Did you say something?
No, I said, yeah, I think so. It's prom.
Oh, okay. But before he shows the video, he's dancing with his girlfriend, and he's, you know, they're talking about what they're going to do after they graduate. And he was like, "Why don't you not go to school and come with me to try to make it in the movies? And, you know, I love you." And she was like, "I have to break up with you." And I was like, I appreciate this scene.
Yes.
Because she's like, "No, we're not in love. Are you out of your mind?"
You're right. And it was very, because that was like right after we find out that his parents are getting divorced, and she's like, immediately calls it out. She's like, well, it was like, she knows, she's like, "I know this has to do with your parents' divorce." So it was like very mature. She was like, "I know this is not like anything real. Like, we're just kids." It was very funny to me how real she was. And he was like, "Well, you're right."
Yeah. Anyway, he shows the video, and it's really great. Everybody has a great reaction to it, except for the one anti-Semitic boy. He kind of made him look stupid a couple times. And the guy who punched him in the face, he kind of turned into a hero in the film because mm-hmm. like he won the race and he was playing volleyball. And right. so he's in the hallway kind of like, I guess, sad about the breakup with his girlfriend yeah. when the most popular boy in school comes in. And he has like this really, this was probably one of my favorite scenes, was just like, this kid was like, why did you make me look like that? First of all, mm-hmm. I can't live up to those standards. And second yeah. of all, I've never been nice to you at all. Why would you do that? And it was a really interesting scene. I feel like it was probably trying to show the power that he mm-hmm. finds as a filmmaker. Like, yeah. look what I can do.
Yeah. Well, what was really interesting was apparently it's based off a real interaction he had in high school. and that he was saying that when him and Tony Kushner were kind of writing it, that they didn't really know how to, like, they weren't really sure that they fully understood what that reaction meant. And kind of like this, I feel like personally, this was probably the most interesting scene in the movie, where it was like this very complex feeling where he's like, feeling kind of almost like grateful to Sam for like portraying him in this way, but also feeling guilty about the way he's treated him, but mm-hmm. also like a little bit like he's humiliated because he's like pushed up to this high standard, and he's mm-hmm. confused, like, why would you do that? And you know, he's like,
that's, it's like someone with a dad who expects a lot from you.
Exactly. And maybe not nice. He's like, yeah, it's very interesting how movies, you know, expose these parts of you. I think that's what's really interesting about it.
Yeah.
And he ends up defending him from the anti-Semitic kid, because the anti-Semitic kid gets made a fool in the movie because, you know, he is a fool.
He deserves it.
Exactly. He is a fool. And so he gets beat up by the popular kid because he's like, you don't get to be like this anymore.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
And luckily they probably only have days left of school, so
exactly.
never gonna see any of these losers again. Exactly. And then we skip to 1 year later. Oh wait, before they got divorced, they were like, here's our new house. And it was this amazing, gorgeous house. And I swear to God, they must have lived there for like a day.
Oh my God. Yes. I remember that the tour that they were doing of that house, I was like, this is the most beautiful home I've ever seen in my life. I would give anything to live here.
Totally.
It was so beautiful.
But the next time we see them, it's just Sam. Is his name, Sam, right?
I'm pretty sure. I hope so.
We haven't said it the whole time.
Yeah.
Sam and his dad in an apartment. So I'm guessing because the girls are going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't feel like he really needs a house, or maybe they're not even going back and forth. Maybe they just live in Arizona. But Sam has been convinced to go to college, even though we had just heard him saying he didn't want to go to college. He wasn't going right. to. But blah, 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 blah. He ends up convincing his dad in this scene that maybe he shouldn't be in college. He should just go try to make it in the movies.
Yeah.
And he's been sending off letters to all the studios, like, mm-hmm. hire me for something, please.
Anything at all.
And someone got his letter and was like, I used to write letters exactly like this. And brings him in for a chat. I feel like it was kind of a like, well, I'm not really going to use you for anything. But right. he very nicely is like, I will, though, introduce you to a great director who's just across the hall. And he takes him over to his office. He's sitting down in the office. The secretary is like, he's at lunch, could be hours. Who knows?
Who knows when he'll come back?
He's looking at all the posters and he realizes, oh my God, this is John Ford's office. And suddenly David Lynch walks in.
I love it.
It was honestly my favorite scene. I almost went back. I didn't take any notes. I almost went back and almost wrote every line of dialogue that David Lynch said, but I decided not to do that.
I wouldn't have blamed you.
But he's got like this eye patch on and lipstick marks all over him.
So ridiculous.
He goes back to his office. The secretary goes back there and... Okay, one sec.
You're fine.
Okay, so anyway, he goes back to meet him and he's like all tongue tied. And John Ford, aka David Lynch, is like, "What's art?"
I immediately thought to myself, like, because I was worried, like, how is David Lynch's acting? Is it just going to be totally different than his normal style of acting, like we've seen in Twin Peaks and other things? But I was like, oh no, it's David Lynch's style of acting that fits somehow perfectly into this movie.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
It was so good.
Yeah, it really elevates Steven Spielberg in my mind that he wanted to cast David Lynch in this
role. Oh yeah, I feel like, you know, they have a, I feel like a lot of directors have a lot of reverence for David Lynch, in an, definitely in an artistic way.
Yeah. Okay, so he's basically very gruff with him. He's like, you know, what do you know about art? And he's like, and he points at a poster and he's like, what is this? What's in this poster? And he's like, there's a person. There's like three people. And he's like, no, where's the horizon? And he's like, it's at the bottom. And he points him to another poster and he's like, what's in this poster? And he's like, five cowboys. It's like, no, where's the horizon? And he's like, at the top. And he goes, the horizon at the bottom is interesting. The horizon at the top is interesting. The horizon in the middle is fucking boring. Now get the fuck out of my office. See, I didn't need to write it down. I know it.
Exactly.
And walking on air, he leaves the office, goes out into the alley, and suddenly the camera, which has got a middle horizon, shifts kind of like, oh, I gotta change my horizon, and puts the horizon at the bottom. Very fun little, oh, my first piece of great advice.
Yes. That would have set me on my path to where I am today.
And that was the end of the movie.
Yeah, I loved the ending. I thought it was a perfect little bow to like be like some sort of like warm feeling, a little hope, a little inspiration kind of feel.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. And that was the Fablements.
Yeah.
Okay, besides David Lynch, what was your favorite part?
Oh. I mean, I really liked... trying to think. There's one scene in the second half that really sticks out to me. And it's when he comes home, I think, from the prom, and his mom is cooking breakfast, and she's kind of like talking to him like, you know, like, did you like the corsage and blah blah blah. And then she's like, all right, do you remember when you were young and I hit you on your back and I immediately said I was sorry and all this stuff? And she was like, I need you to forgive me right now. And it was very like sweet and very much like, you know, as a kid, like, you don't really, especially like considering how remorseful she was directly afterwards and it never happened again. Like, of course he was not going to hold on to that as a grudge or anything. Yeah. And it was just very like funny to be for like the kid to kind of have that power in that relationship to be like, no, I forgive you, but you know, I didn't hold on to that. And it was just very sweet. And I loved the switch in the power dynamics between them. And I just loved really every scene with just the two of them. I thought it was very sweet.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
I think I really did like that scene with the mean kid, or the I guess popular kid, and him at the end. And of course, David Lynch.
Really, of course.
Made the movie great. In my opinion.
I feel like, you know, I would have liked a little more weirdness in it. That would have been like, because I feel like the David Lynch scene really gave it that little bit of weirdness where you're like, it got you thinking, like, what's the goal of the scene? Like, where are we going with it? And it kind of takes you a second to get there.
It would have been cool if they had taken, if he had taken that like last moment where he's adjusting the camera based on the advice, if somehow we could have seen his directing kind of like a person in the movie, you know, like if that kind of could have somehow been throughout the movie. I don't know, you know, how that would work, but I just think that would be cool.
Yeah.
Now here's another question for you.
Okay.
What David Lynch movie do you think is Steven Spielberg's favorite?
Oh, gosh. You know, I was kind of thinking about this at the end of the movie. I don't know why, but Wild at Heart comes to mind. Ooh, and
that
I
does
don't
seem like a
I don't know like why
a, it has this kind of themes that it feels like Steven Spielberg would appreciate, like the driving, the kids, you know.
Yeah, and like kind of like it, I feel like Steven Spielberg has this kind of like quintessential like suburban American quality to him, definitely based on all the movies that he's made, but I feel like there is somewhat of that, maybe not suburban, but like American quality to Wild at Heart, where it feels very American, and the kind of like Wild West of it all, it feels very adventure-y. It feels the most, I would say, adventure forward of David Lynch's movies that we've watched so far. And I feel like he really would love that, and just the craziness of it.
I was thinking, I wonder if it would be Eraserhead, because just like it made such an impact on the scene. And, you know, David Lynch was asked to do Star Wars, even though Steven Spielberg wasn't directly Star Wars. But I think that maybe it was actually The Elephant Man would be his favorite. Because it definitely has that like classic Hollywood feel. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. It has like John Hurt and Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
I just, and Mel Brooks was the producer. Like he probably was like, oh, Eraserhead's interesting, but ooh, Elephant Man is a masterpiece. So I don't know, I feel like maybe he would love Elephant Man. Now maybe that's changed over time, but I think that might have been the first one that he really fell in love with him.
Or Straight Story feels very Steven Spielberg coded.
I bet he did like that one too. Of course,
it's, you know, it's a sweet movie and he seems to like sweet things.
Yeah. Do you think that he's read any Pride, any Jane Austen?
Oh, I feel like he definitely has. I mean, how could you go your whole life without reading at least one? Now, if we were to pick a, maybe summarize his favorite of the picks.
What would he direct most? What would he be the best at directing? Which one?
Probably Northanger Abbey.
Ooh, that's a good one.
He does, I feel like he does really well with young protagonists, and especially because he really takes advantage of their big imaginations. And Catherine
Marland, he does like an adventure, and that is a real adventure.
Yeah, and it's like you could totally like take all of these like crazy thoughts and imagination type things that she is going through and really like blow them up and kind of make them larger than life in a movie. And I feel like he loves to do that.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. But I would say because of his love of war, doing war, it's just kind of like my least favorite part about of his oeuvre. I would say maybe Persuasion, just because maybe he can like really get into the Captain Wentworth, you know,
drama of
aspect of it all.
Yeah. Persuasion was my second choice because it has, he can do also like, and this might tie into his war movies, but like very moody movies and make them very like heartwarming in a way, like the way that they kind of turn around at the end. And that would be a perfect setup for him to do that.
Yeah. Actually, when you say that, it makes me wish, I don't know that he would ever want to or, you know, ever, but I wish that he would do a Mansfield Park because, and like, not to say that Fanny Price is the equivalent of a Forrest Gump, but like to treat her with that kind of, you know, lead character energy, I think would be fun to watch.
Yeah. I would totally watch a Steven Spielberg, Jane Austen crossover event.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all for today.
What a fun episode. I had a great time.
Yeah, I did too. And we're actually, this is kind of like a little section that we're doing where it's like real life. So we're going to do Becoming Jane, which is Jane Austen, movie about Jane Austen when she's young. And Miss Austen Regrets, which is about Jane Austen when she's older. And then we're also going to do Lucky, which is another movie that David Lynch was acting in.
Yes. Very exciting.
I don't know which one's coming next, but we're going to do one of those.
One of those. But I'm excited to watch these. I've not watched any of these movies, so it's nice to see some new ones.
I have seen the Jane Austen ones, but it's been a long time. But I haven't seen Lucky yet. I've owned it since we started this podcast. I think I got it specifically to do on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
But I'm excited to watch that one because also Harry Dean Stanton is in it. And I think his son directed it, David Lynch's son.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think it's like a fun kind of a buddy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun.
Oh, I like that. Well, I'm excited for that one. I love a good, like, I feel like there are some really good, like, Hollywood director nepo people that I'm excited to see what David Lynch's son can produce, like the way that he directs it, and I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, so look forward to that in the next few weeks. And oh, if you want to get in contact with us.
Yeah. If you want to let us.
Like, goodbye.
If you want to let us know your thoughts on the Fablemans, what was your favorite scene, and really anything we talked about in the beginning.
Any horror book recommendations?
Oh, yes, definitely those.
Not Stephen King, just because I've already read all this, but.
Yeah, give us some, like, maybe some deep cuts, you know, something that's not as popular. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
You can email us at mannersandmadness@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter @mannersmadness, or on Instagram and Threads @mannersandmadnesspod, or you can leave a 1-minute voicemail on our website at mannersandmadness.com.
Yes. And we'll talk to you next week.
Yes. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Good night.